Headlines this hour. Israeli forces shoot dead a Palestinian for an alleged knife attack in Ashkelon amid rising tensions in the occupied territories. The U.S. deploys warships off the Korean Peninsula following an escalation in the region over North Korea's missile test. Also in the headlines, authorities in central Philippines evacuate thousands of residents as flash floods and landslides kill at least 30 people.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Situation remains volatile in the occupied Palestinian territories, where Israeli forces have killed one more Palestinian just a few hours ago. Israeli police allege they shot and killed the man after he wounded one of their forces in a knife attack in the coastal city of Ashkelon. That brings to five the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces since Sunday. Palestinians have mounted retaliatory attacks in recent weeks. They've carried out at least four operations that have claimed the lives of 14 Israelis since March 22. At least 14 Palestinians have also been killed during the same period.
Tensions have been running high in the occupied Palestinian territories, mainly in the northern West Bank city of Jenin in the last few days. Israeli forces have shot dead several Palestinians in separate incidents, including two women, in less than 24 hours. On Monday, 17-year-old Palestinian teenager Mohammed Zakarni succumbed to injuries he sustained during an Israeli military raid in Jenin. This came as Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has granted all military and security forces full freedom of operation. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs considered Bennett's statement as an order to kill Palestinians.
It's an order to kill. It's a war crime, actually, and a crime against humanity of the Palestinian people. Israel is trying now to escalate the situation in the occupied Palestinian territory to consolidate its apartheid and colonial regime in the occupied Palestinian territory using all the illegal measures, including the extrajudicial killing.
As Israeli forces continue raiding Jenin and the surrounding towns, Palestinian resistance groups in the city announced a state of alert and called for general mobilization of their activists to confront the Israeli military incursion. Protests have also been held across the occupied West Bank in solidarity with Jenin and its residents. Moreover, the Israeli military forces have maintained their presence across the occupied West Bank. Experts warn that they will also escalate a crackdown against Palestinians and use even more excessive force to fight the Palestinian resistance.
We are facing an escalation of events. The smell of a new intifada rises. Numerous funerals for Palestinians in several areas due to clashes taking place in friction points and sites. One can tell an escalation is expected on all fronts, which might then lead to the return of calm.
Tel Aviv has been stunned by a string of deadly operations in the last weeks. 14 Israelis, including soldiers, have been killed. Since then, tensions have risen sharply. The Israeli army has stepped up its daily raids and arrests in an attempt to crack down on the spiraling violence.
It's obvious that Tel Aviv is heading toward another heavy-handed crackdown against Palestinians in the occupied territories, and specifically in Jenin. But Palestinians who have been confronting military raids warn such crimes and escalation could, at the end of the day, set off a new intifada or popular uprising against the regime. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has hailed the heroic acts of Palestinian youths in their fight against the Israeli regime. Sayed Hassan Nasrallah said Israeli atrocities will only make Palestinians more determined in their resistance against the regime. The Hezbollah leader said the ongoing developments in Palestine will have a great impact on the struggle against Israel and the regime's future outlook. Nasrallah slammed some Arab states' decision to normalize ties with Tel Aviv. He said those who believe such moves would undermine Palestinians' resistance are deluded. He pointed to the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington always defends aggressors and those who start wars.
We see that the United States of America continues to defend and protect the enemy that commits massacres, that launches wars, that occupies other people's lands, and even prohibits denouncing such an enemy and leave aside the fact that they prohibit and veto any resolution that would punish the Israelis, but also all the continuous wars on Palestinians and Lebanese and the people of the region.
Nasrallah also touched upon next month's parliamentary elections in Lebanon, saying the surveys show that Hezbollah and its allies will win the vote. He said that certain parties are misleading the Lebanese people by telling them that the resistance weapons are the cause of their problems. Nasrallah said such moves are aimed at appeasing the U.S., the West, and some Arab regimes in order to win their financial support. He said that Hezbollah intends to be present in the government to prevent anyone from using the state to target the resistance or to stab it in the back. The Hezbollah chief further warned against efforts made to delay the polls, accusing the U.S. Embassy in Beirut of trying to impede the electoral process. Nasrallah also called for a massive turnout in the International Quds Day rallies across the Muslim world on the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan as a sign of solidarity with Palestinians. Iran summons the Afghan Charge d'Affaires to lodge a strong protest over the attacks against its embassy in Kabul and consulate general in Herat. The foreign ministry has called on the Taliban government to hold the perpetrators to account, stressing that governments are responsible for the protection of diplomatic missions. Iran has also closed all consular services in its missions in Afghanistan until further notice. It says the missions will not resume work until the Afghan foreign ministry provides the necessary assurances on the security of diplomatic missions. On Monday, extremist mobs attacked the Iranian missions with stones. Tehran blamed ill-wishers who are trying to harm the strong bonds between the two neighbors. Iraq has called for the dismantlement of a refugee camp controlled by U.S.-backed Kurdish militants near the Iraqi border in Syria. Baghdad says the camp, which houses thousands of Daesh terrorists, poses a real threat to Iraq's national security. The U.S. presence there with the stated aim of eliminating Daesh terrorists is seen by many as just a cover for Washington to maintain its illegal presence in Syria.
Al-Hawl camp is located 15 kilometers away from the Syrian-Iraqi border. It is the largest camp of Daesh elements and is controlled by the U.S.-affiliated Syrian Democratic Forces. The militants are holding tens of thousands of people in Al-Hawl camp, East Hasaka City. They run it in cooperation with U.S. occupation forces, including thousands of Daesh terrorists of different nationalities and their families, whom Washington invests and employs to implement its plans in the region. Meanwhile, Iraq's National Security Advisor, Qasem al-Araji, has expressed concern about the possibility of the release of Daesh elements and leaders from prisons controlled by U.S.-backed Kurdish militants in eastern Syria. He says Daesh has made numerous attempts to break such prisons since most of the terrorist group's leaders are incarcerated there. He has frequently met with U.S. officials and United Nations envoys to stress the need to resolve the issue of the Al-Hawl refugee camp in the northeastern Syrian province of Hasaka. The senior Iraqi official called on foreign governments to repatriate their citizens from Al-Hawl and urged a rapid dismantlement of the camp. Daesh began a terror campaign in Iraq in 2014, overrunning vast swathes in lightning attacks. Iraq declared victory over Daesh in December 2017 after a three-year counter-terrorism military campaign, which also had the support of neighboring Iran. The remnants, though, keep staging sporadic attacks across Iraq, attempting to regroup and unleash fresh violence. Daesh has intensified its terrorist attacks in Iraq since January 2020, when the United States assassinated top Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and deputy commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes, near Baghdad International Airport. The Iraqi anti-terror resistance groups have repeatedly warned Baghdad that the remnants of Daesh active in Syria's U.S.-occupied east may find unhindered access to the Iraqi border and infiltrate into its western Anbar province. This is while the positions of the PMU and its affiliated resistance groups operating against Daesh in the border regions have repeatedly come under attack by the U.S. military over the past years.
The United States funnels money into these groups, into these very kind of ethno-nationalist and separatist organizations that are against the current government of, in this case, Syria. And of course, the government of Syria happens to be very anti-U.S., so naturally, the United States is going to fund groups that want to topple the government of a given country that opposes NATO, that opposes to the West, that opposes U.S. dominance.
Syria has been gripped by foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. The Syrian government says the U.S., the Israeli regime, and their Western and regional allies are aiding Takfiri terrorist groups that are spreading insecurity in the country. Not only that, the U.S. is stealing Syria's oil. An American firm was reported to have secured a deal with U.S.-backed Kurds for Syrian oil.
The U.S. military has stationed forces and military equipment in eastern and northeastern Syria, with the Pentagon claiming that the deployment is aimed at preventing the oil fields in the area from falling into the hands of Daesh terrorists. Damascus, however, says the unlawful deployment is meant to plunder the country's resources. Former U.S. President Donald Trump admitted on several occasions that American forces were in Syria for its oil. Additionally, security conditions have been deteriorating in the areas under the control of U.S.-backed Kurdish militants in Syria's northern and northeastern provinces of Raqqa, Hasaka, and Deir ez-Zor.
The Assads, Hafez and Bashar al-Assad, who have been the last two presidents of Syria, have not allowed the United States or the corporations of the West to come into the country and buy up the oil companies and began allowing Shell and British Petroleum and the other major oil monopolies to come into Syria and to steal the natural resources that rightly belong to the Syrian nation, to the Syrian government and their people. And so as a result, the United States has decided, with the backing of NATO and Western European powers, that the only option at this point is either a full invasion of Syria to topple the Assad government, which would be absolutely disastrous and have horrible repercussions for the United States and the West on a geopolitical scale.
Local Syrians complain that U.S.-backed militants' constant raids have generated a state of frustration and instability, severely affecting their businesses and livelihood. Residents accuse the U.S.-sponsored militants of stealing crude oil. Local council affiliated with the militants also stand accused of financial corruption.
The United States deploys an aircraft carrier strike group near the Korean Peninsula amid new tensions with North Korea over its missile tests. A U.S. official says the USS Abraham Lincoln strike group is now in the Sea of Japan for exercises with Japanese forces. South Korea, however, has refused to comment whether it is also involved in the drills. This is the first such deployment since 2017. Last week, advisors to South Korea's president-elect asked for the deployment of U.S. strategic assets amid reports that Pyongyang is planning a new nuclear test. North Korea has carried out a series of missile tests in recent months. The country is opposed to U.S. military presence in the region and views it as a preparation for war. Tropical storm Meggy hits the Philippines, forcing thousands of people to evacuate their homes. Heavy rains have submerged several towns and roads. The storm and rain have also knocked out power supply, flooded homes and fields, and caused mudslides in villages. Authorities say that at least 30 people have also died. Search and rescue operations are also underway to find those reported missing. Meggy is the first storm to hit the archipelago this year, with winds of up to 65 kilometers per hour. The Philippines typically sees an average of 20 tropical storms each year. The war between Russia and Ukraine is nearing its seventh week. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says that his country will not halt its military operation during the next round of peace talks. Lavrov says Russia suspended military action during the first round of talks. He says that Moscow will no longer pause its operation, as it is convinced that Ukrainian forces will not follow suit. In the meantime, Moscow says it has destroyed S-300 air defense systems supplied to Ukraine by an unidentified European country. The statement comes as Ukraine says it is bracing for a major Russian military offensive in its eastern Donbas region. The revelation has been also confirmed by the head of the self-proclaimed Donetsk Republic, who pledged to intensify operations to liberate the region. Russia says the possible membership of Sweden and Finland in NATO would not bring stability to Europe. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov reiterated that NATO remains a tool geared towards confrontation. He denounced the military alliance's further expansion in Europe. The possibility of accession of Sweden and Finland to NATO was raised again recently amid the West's tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. The U.S. State Department says the prospect of the two countries joining NATO was discussed in a meeting among the alliance's foreign ministers. The NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says that it would be possible to admit the membership of Helsinki and Stockholm, quote, quite quickly. Russia launched a military offensive in Ukraine in late February, following NATO's failure to provide Moscow with guarantees that it would bar Ukraine from becoming a member. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson landed in the Ukrainian capital Kyiv over the weekend on a surprise visit where he pledged additional military hardware to the tune of tens of millions of pounds, as well as ramping up the anti-Russian rhetoric. British observers are now asking whether this move by Johnson will do anything other than prolonging the conflict. Amina Taylor has more from the British capital, London.
Britain has made its pro-Ukraine stance clear, with the flag of Kyiv fluttering atop several government buildings in Whitehall. Yet it was still a surprise when UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson popped up alongside Vladimir Zelensky for a walkabout in the near-deserted streets of the Ukrainian capital. The mutual political backslapping seems at odds with the reality of the crisis, but Johnson pledged further military support, including 120 armored vehicles and anti-ship missile systems.
Together with our partners, we are going to ratchet up the economic pressure, and we will continue to intensify, week by week, the sanctions on Russia. Not just freezing assets in banks and sanctioning oligarchs, but moving away from use of Russian hydrocarbons.
Back in London, the optics were not as glossy.
Well, I think Boris Johnson is engaging in a propaganda exercise designed to manufacture consent for prolonging a war, which a proxy war, that is, which is unwinnable. And rather than indulging in this sort of publicity exercise, he ought to be focusing, in my opinion, on diplomacy to bring the war to an end.
Boris Johnson has pledged further support to Kyiv in the shape of military hardware and by ramping up the anti-Russian action. It's also been mentioned that the Prime Minister might have taken this crisis as an opportunity to bolster his conflict credentials. But what of the voices urging a de-escalation and not adding fuel to this international fire? Well, many argue they won't be found here in the corridors of British power. Britain's role in the conflict, especially its supply of more armaments, has not brought the result it perhaps hoped.
Well, it doesn't help the people of Ukraine, and nor does it help the people in this country or indeed across Europe. The strategy which is being pursued by NATO is entirely counterproductive. I mean, they're heading potentially towards a wider conflagration, maybe a third world war.
At the heart of this conflict is a wider issue, one Zelensky reminded Johnson.
If we were in NATO, this war wouldn't have happened, or it would have unfolded differently. You would have the shoulder of close neighbours, strong neighbours, or we could all fight together, and probably war would not happen.
Until real diplomacy prevails with Moscow and Kyiv thrashing out their regional affairs, publicity tours like the ones undertaken by Britain's Prime Minister will only do so much. Amina Taylor, London.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
He who asks questions cannot avoid the answers. A simple question.
In Westminster, there's trouble over members of parliament with second jobs. The UK's opposition Labour Party has attacked the Conservatives, and Prime Minister Boris Johnson in particular, for allowing MPs to earn big money for extra work outside Parliament. They say the Prime Minister was wrong to defend those who earn vast sums outside Parliament for work that has nothing to do with their duty to represent the people who elected them and whose taxes pay their parliamentary salaries.
This dispute has arisen following revelations about former Conservative cabinet member Owen Paterson, who resigned from his parliamentary position after revelations concerning his external earnings and lobbying activities, which are forbidden under parliamentary rules. Since Mr. Paterson's departure, it has emerged that another Conservative MP, Sir Geoffrey Cox, earned almost £6 million by advising the British Virgin Islands over an investigation into governance issues.
I probably would never have had a practice.
Receiving money in order to lobby in Parliament is banned for all MPs. However, Boris Johnson has been highly resistant to changing the rules, and this has had consequences for his reputation. But the situation is made even more confusing by the discovery that all major parties have MPs who earn money outside their parliamentary duties. Indeed, both Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Leader of the Opposition, Sir Keir Starmer, have themselves made big money from second jobs, leading to an impact on their images too.
Does the public approve of party leaders like Sir Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson both earning large sums outside Parliament? And should MPs be allowed to have second jobs in the first place? Simple questions with important answers. And let's begin with what MPs earn for their work as members of Parliament. That's around £82,000 a year. How do people here in Westminster feel about that level of income? We asked them. Here's what they said.
I think they must earn something more. They must be rewarded. And overall, they must support us, all of us, especially now after the pandemic. We really need their support.
I don't think they're even worth that. I don't, honestly. I mean, they don't do nothing for the public. All they do is just sit there and make laws, and laws for themselves, and laws onto themselves. And they just criticise us for demonstrating and trying to get our rights.
I think that's okay for the job they do.
It's one role and it should be in one location. I appreciate they've got to be split into constituency office and serving in Parliament, but that should be it. And I think it's overpaid because they did receive an extra £10,000 in relation to working from home for the pandemic. Is that going to come off their salary again? Is that included in the £82,000 or is that a plus? You know, yet to be clarified.
As long as they're representing their constituents, then that's okay.
And some MPs nowadays, you know, you haven't got the grassroots MPs that you used to have. You have career politicians, so they're in it for what they can get themselves rather than what I can do for my community and my constituency.
Seems reasonable.
MPs get about £82,000 a year. What do you think of that as a salary for a parliamentarian?
Well, I think it's a good salary compared to the general population, but I think if you want the top people, that might not be quite enough to attract them in. There's, you know.
It'll depend who you ask. For the sort of people that you're going to attract or want to attract in there, it's probably not a significant salary.
I think it's reasonable. Maybe, to be honest, it might even be a little bit low if they didn't have any other income.
That's a lot, but these are the people that rule the country, so hard to say. Maybe they deserve this money if they rule the country well enough.
Of course, the problem is not the salaries, the extras they get. I think if it's just the 82,000, that's fine. But I know they get more money for housing and for traveling. And then when you add up everything, they become expensive.
What do you think of an MP's income? That's currently set at around £82,000 a year, plus expenses. That's probably €100,000.
That's a lot. But isn't the sense behind it that you pay them a lot so they aren't corrupt? Are they corrupt? I don't know.
Well, they pay income tax on that. I would say they should pay VAT on top of that as well.
Well, it will depend in the number of legislation that they do, right?
I think it's fair. Seems like a good wage to be earned in for that position. So I think it's fair.
Some MPs earn hundreds of thousands of pounds in second jobs outside Parliament. How do ordinary people feel about that?
If they pay taxes, I don't mind. If we pay taxes, you can do as much as you can. I don't mind.
Some of them earn hundreds of thousands of pounds a year in second jobs. What do you think?
Absolutely horrific. We need experienced MPs that do have life experience. Life experience is vital in order to act on behalf of your constituencies.
I think that's disgraceful, you know, but I believe that if you are an MP, you're there to serve your constituents and your community, not to go and feather your nest by doing 2, 3, 4 jobs.
I think 900,000, it sounds like, I'm not sure what they're paying for. That might be a bit much, and, you know, for 900,000, they're expecting a lot. And then especially, you know, if there's a conflict, it's no good.
Some of them take it into their own hands and earn hundreds of thousands a year doing other work and second jobs. What do you make of that?
I didn't realise they did until just this last week or so, and I was quite surprised. And I can understand why some of them need to, but I think it's almost at times abusing the privilege of their position.
I think it's okay. I think as long as it doesn't get in the way and they're not using government resources to earn those funds, I don't see anything wrong with another job on the side.
Second jobs are often, in politics, not really what you want. And especially if it's about that large sum of money, shouldn't be the case, I think.
I think it's quite offensive, to be honest, if they're using the time that they should be giving to their constituents for earning other money.
That's not moral, in my opinion. They should focus entirely on governing, on being the politicians, not the businessmen. No, I don't accept it.
We've learned this week that MPs earn hundreds of thousands of pounds in second jobs outside Parliament, often lobbying and so on. What do you make of that?
Well, I think people voted for them to the MPs to represent them in Parliament, not to be doing something else, to have the focus on the country. There are loads of issues and important issues here.
Well, maybe somebody's paying them, so they maybe do something in the parliament for them.
I think it's a bit of a betrayal, really.
It's a bit steep, considering at the minute with the NHS as well, like, struggling. Surely more money could be funded into the NHS rather than MPs' salaries, but that's just my opinion.
I don't think that should happen. I think the first job should be as an MP.
Second jobs meaning lobbying. Yeah, I think that's terrible. It happens in the States all the time, and I think it leads to just an oligarchy, basically, of business.
Boris Johnson, who, as an MP, has himself earned over £1 million from second jobs since 2015, has been slow to commit to reforming the system. What does the public think of this?
I wish him all the best. But Boris, please be honest with us. Please, as much as you can. Yeah, you must be honest. Now, even more than before, yeah.
He's totally shirked his responsibility. And I think the ethos that he should be leading from the front, when he isn't, he's losing support of his own colleagues.
Again, disgraceful behaviour. As the leader of our country, I would expect him to set the example in everything he does.
Yeah, he's definitely part of the system, so I'm not surprised by that.
Well, no wonder he's pretty tardy in trying to change the rules. I mean, let's be honest, everybody's human, and they sometimes find it difficult to separate their personal interests from maybe the public interest. So, not overly thrilled. But then, if you look at the Prime Minister, the 24/7 nature of the role, then his salary is, to be honest, laughable.
What do you think about the fact that Boris Johnson, all this is going on, Boris Johnson earned £1.5 million outside Parliament from other jobs?
We know that. We know it's all going on anyway. They all try and keep it a secret, but there's always a leak.
I understand that he's slow, because it's in his benefit, but yeah, that also shouldn't be the case.
Fortunately, I will say nothing, because I am not from UK. But if the same situation will happen in Poland, I will be very nervous.
It's not illegal. I think it's immoral, because he's doing something else instead of leading the country and making loads of money, when being the prime minister, he should be just focused on doing the job, leading the country, especially with Brexit and the pandemic and loads of important issues here.
Well, I think there is a self-interest there, right? There are certain bias. I'm perfectly fine if politicians, before stepping in the office, they have certain interests, but then when they step in office, they need to put that separate and make sure that they are doing a proper job for the people.
Of course, it should be reformed, and I'm not going to go any further about Boris Johnson.
So we can blame all this on Boris Johnson. However, we had a Labour government for how many years? 10 years? What did they do to reform it? Were they not taking advantage as well?
The figures tell a revealing financial story. As we have noted, Conservative Prime Minister Boris Johnson has earned £1.6 million since re-entering Parliament in 2015. But one of his main critics, Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer, himself earned £26,000 for 106 hours of legal work, receiving £18,000 for one day's worth of work. Perhaps even more surprisingly, the Labour politician Chris Bryant MP, who chairs the Committee on Standards and Privileges, earned £2,000 from Goldman Sachs for giving a speech. In total, over 200 MPs have received declarable earnings above their MP salary in the last year.
Is the public aware that Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer, who has attacked the Conservatives for second jobs, has earned tens of thousands of pounds from second jobs himself? And what do they think of that?
Mate, they're all at it. Listen, there's no such thing as Labour, Liberal, Conservative. There's no such thing as that no more. They're all one agenda. And the one agenda is they all rule by the same means and the same tactics.
Well, I just think... I think if it's okay for him to do that, and that might be his opinion and he could make the case, then he shouldn't criticize other people. In general, you know, I think, you know, the leader of a major political party should be busy enough doing that.
It's exactly the same, so it's quite cynical having a crack at one of the other parliamentarians, and then you're doing the same yourself, so...
He's not doing what the constituents want him to do, and he's not listening, and then that becomes an issue, obviously. I think that's his job, to listen to the people, and if they're calling for reform, he needs to obviously take it into consideration. And if he's not doing that, then I think a deeper look needs to occur.
No, I didn't know that, but again, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, why? I mean, if you think about it, if they're allowed to do it, and they always trump out this thing, I didn't do anything wrong, the law allows me to do it. Well, who sets the law? Well, I set the law. Well, of course it isn't. I mean, come on, really. I mean, if we were able to do that, even, ordinary people able to do that, we wouldn't break the law.
This is a problem not with the Labour or the Conservatives, a problem with the Parliament, with the rules. They are doing that because they can do that. They are allowed to do that. So they need to change the rules.
If he's a part of it as well, he equally should be disciplined in accordance with a code that is sufficient to deal with all MPs. You don't change it just for you. Disciplinary code across the board that affects everybody.
So Sir Keir Starmer, the head of the Labour Party, the head of the opposition, himself has earned £18,000 in one day. He's a barrister, a lawyer, outside of Parliament. What do you make of that across Parliament?
They just all seem to be very high paid. Like, it's all high paid salaries. No one's, like, minimum wage. Like, there's so many people on minimum wage at the minute, and they... Like, I'm not saying that they don't do a lot for the country, but some of them, surely they are not entitled to that much money per day. £18,000, but very steep.
I think the same applies to both sides, or all sides of the House.
The problem is, they're both as bad as each other. You can't single out and say it's just the Conservatives. As you say, Keir Starmer's just as bad.
Another central question. Should MPs be permitted to earn extra money from second jobs, or should that be banned?
No. No, this job is already a big job, is already quite tough enough, yeah.
Absolutely not, no, no. To be honest, if they have if there is an issue that they feel strongly about that they want to represent, they should be volunteering their own time outside of working hours to contribute towards that cause, to say, I believe in it, therefore I'm here and I'm volunteering. No.
You know, their main job is to be an MP, which, as far as I can tell, is a full-time job, so, you know, they can't. You know, you can't earn multiples of that salary or even big chunks, because to me that just means you're not spending enough time at work.
If it's not playing off the fact that they're a parliamentarian, if it is to do with their role, access to people, no. If it's a skill set that they had before, to an extent, yes. But it should not interfere with the work that they've been elected to do.
Do you think second jobs should be banned for MPs?
I think they should, yes. You're here to support your community and your constituents. If it's not a full-time job looking after your local constituents, what are you in it for?
I think it should be banned, yeah. It's his job to be a prime minister, and that's his job only. What he does afterwards, that's his choice. But when he's prime minister, he should focus on what he's doing.
They may only be in power or an MP for a few years, and so they would need to consider, you know, their careers or their futures, future income. I don't want to take that away from them. But while they're MPs, there should be a mechanism that we have that clearly enables them to maybe maintain their careers without earning the monies, obscene amounts of money.
I think they earn enough money just to focus on one job, which is to be a member of the parliament.
Yeah, honestly, it should be banned.
I think if they were to get a job stacking shelves at Tesco's, I think they'll be okay, because the teacher would keep them in touch with keeping a ground level to see how life is really like for the ordinary people.
So, in light of these events, these revelations, do you think MPs should have second jobs outside parliament, or do you think that should be banned?
I'd probably say no. Like, they should focus on their primary job. Like, unless they could do voluntary work if they wanted to, do fundraising, but other than that, I'd probably go with no.
I think, generally speaking, right, they should not have a second job, right?
Their first job should be as their MP, serving their constituents and the government and the opposition. They shouldn't be doing second jobs as a matter of course.
Single job, but if they have a second job, it shouldn't be lobbying. It should be maybe business of their own.
The attacks and counter-attacks between Conservative and Labour politicians have painted a revealing picture. Almost one-third of MPs have received money from work outside Parliament, with some, such as Sir Geoffrey Cox MP, earning millions. All this has left the UK's government deeply immersed in the dispute about MPs' second jobs.
Labour's leader, Sir Keir Starmer, has criticised Prime Minister Johnson for a lack of leadership on dealing with a subject that clearly irritates the public. While the Labour leader can point the finger of blame at the Conservative Prime Minister for inaction over income from outside Parliament, given the fact that both he and the Conservative Prime Minister have both earned money from second jobs. The answers to our simple questions indicate the public is minded to condemn them both.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity,
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين. Welcome dear listeners to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For Humanity, and the topic today is Hollywood, conditioning of the subconscious mind and extermination of the human rights. This is Sheikh Ali Hemani. Earlier we had discussed some of the methods and techniques they use to condition the subconscious mind of people. One of the methods we discussed about was the program followed by Ivan Pavlov, that how he conditioned the subconscious mind of the animals around him. Then we discussed about the case where Edward Bernays in the documentary Century of Self used women to advocate the usage of cigarettes by calling them torches of freedom, and also looked at some of the concepts and high-tech technology that is used by the advertisements and media, how advertisement and media uses high-tech cameras to check the blinking of the eyes and the dilation of the pupil in the kids to design an advertisement that will keep the kids engaged and involved. So if you remember about Ivan Pavlov, we said how he used the sound of a bell and the light to condition the subconscious mind of the dog. And later on, without providing any food, he was able to stimulate the dog to salivate. And the other one was by bringing in young women and influencing the rich class of the community and getting the women to smoke and promoting the advertisement of smoking through rich women, and Edward Bernays calling them torches of freedom was able to promote the idea. Now, the important point and the important element that we want to discuss here today is that how they, by conditioning our subconscious mind, leads us to involuntarily behave in a particular way. So in the Ivan Pavlov scenario, we had discussed that how he used external stimuli to get the dog to behave in a particular way. Similarly, how this media runs advertisements, runs cartoons, runs different serials and programs to condition the subconscious mind of our children, of the teen and the youth, and leading them to behave in a particular way, causing them to act in a particular way among the audience, among the people around him. For example, they train us to be sarcastic. They train us how to insult others. They train us how to laugh at others and show that we are stronger than the others and others are weak. So if you look at all these different serials, you know, the school, the serials that are related to schooling, the serials where they show about how the teens meet up in the house and other places, you will see that constantly they are ridiculing others. They're laughing at others. They're sarcastically taunting others. They're showing off their clothes and pointing out that, look, I have better quality clothes and you have poor quality clothes, and therefore I have a right to laugh upon you because you wear a X brand and I wear a Y brand, which is a better brand, which is a higher quality brand. I have a right to laugh at you, ridicule you, and you know, treat you as a subordinate entity rather than treating you equal. So the whole idea behind this media, the whole idea behind the Hollywood, is to condition the mind and get us to behave in a particular way so that they know our behavior and they can design their content based on our behavior, and then they can lead us to behave, act, and decide in a particular way. Meaning that causing our free will to be conditioned at their hands and leading them to control our free will. Let's take a short break here and come back and discuss it further.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You can send us your emails, comments and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to the program for Humanity, and you're listening to the segment Hollywood and the Conditioning of the Subconscious Mind. So we were talking about how media impacts our children and the youth. So if you look at various serials, for example, take the latest movie Avengers. You know, in one of the segments of the movie Avengers, you would notice that all the Avengers join hand together and they're fighting against the enemy. Particularly if you remember the first movie Avengers, they were all fighting against Loki. Somewhere in between, somewhere in the middle of the movie, you would notice that Hulk punches Thor. Now, the question is, why? Though they are all on the same side, they're all Avengers, they're all fighting one single enemy, but why was there a need for Hulk to punch Thor? This is what the media is teaching our children, that even though you're friends, even though you're together, even though you're on the same team, even though you have the common enemy, but among yourself, you still need to establish who the leader is. You still need to establish that you are better than the others. You still need to establish that you are stronger than the others. And that's why you would see that in most of the movies, be it movies related to war, be it movies related to superheroes, you will always find that even the good guys constantly fight among themselves to prove that they are stronger, they're better than the others, and they deserve to lead and they deserve to be the leader of the group. And how does this impact our youth? This impacts our youth and in a way that it leads to identity crisis. Now, this person who's watching this is confused that if I'm a good guy, why am I against some of the other good guys within my team? Why am I standing up against them? Why am I fighting against them? Just like Civil War of Avengers. All of them are good, but because of simple conflict of opinion, they start fighting with each other to the extent that they're willing to break the whole alliance of Avengers and break into different parts. So this leads to identity crisis among the youth. They're watching and they're thoroughly confused that what is the good side? What is the bad side? Who do I need to support? Who do I not need to support? How do I behave with my friends? And how do I behave with my enemies? How do I behave with my parents? How do I behave in the society? And that's why you will see the teen are thoroughly confused and they behave in an obnoxious way in the society. They have a different hairstyle. They have the oddest looking hairstyle. You know, someone has got spikes on their head. Someone's got some other design on their head. Someone is keeping a goatee. Someone are piercing their ears. Someone is piercing their eyes. Why? Because they want people to pay attention to them. Because they want people to notice them. Because they want people to look at them and say, you look different. You look special. You look unique. You look out of place, you're different than others. And sometimes they have the strength to beat up others, to grab that attention from the people and show that they are better and smarter than others. And if they lack that ability to show that I'm the boss, I'm the man around here, they choose different methods to attract attention. And that is by tattooing themselves, piercing themselves, having the weirdest looking clothing style and wearing the weirdest looking shoes or, you know, torn jeans so that they can get all that attention and show that I am part of the community, I am part of the society, and I am better than others. Therefore, look at me and pay attention to me, and I am different, and therefore I am unique, and therefore I am better than others. Inshallah, we will continue in our next episode. Until then, fi amanillah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi. اللهم صل على محمد وآله.
We are with you. What about you?
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.